just to see that little girl's face.
Jumped out just for you.
Well, Shirley and I have been members joyfully of Living Water for 10 years. And as I refer to the congregation, let me quickly express my gratitude for the way in which you honored me by remembering my 60th anniversary of ordination on a Sunday afternoon in May. That was a heartwarming thing for you to do. I am grateful. This is the first time I've preached at Living Water. In fact, it's the first time I've preached for several years. So be kind. When Mark asked me, I asked, what's the gospel lesson? The beheading of John the Baptist. I said, okay. No, actually, my sister traced our ancestry, the Perry family ancestry, back to the sixth wife of Henry VIII. So I do have a beheader in my ancestry, but I'm not going to go there. Mark, what's the epistle lesson? Ephesians 1. Ah, here we go. That'll preach, because I know that one of the most powerful revelations of the mystery of God's will is found in Ephesians chapter 1. I'm going to read verse 10. With all wisdom and insight, God has made known to us the mystery of his will, according to his good pleasure that he set forth in Christ as a plan for the fullness of time to gather up all things in him, things in heaven and things on earth. Wow. Now, I'm not going to talk about gathering up all things because that would take a week. But I am going to focus on the fact that when God gathers up all things, he gathers us together. Old joke, how many points should a sermon have? Answer, at least one. My one point is that Christ gathers us all. The word gathers comes from an interesting Greek verb, anakephalio, and the root meaning of that has a picture in it, and it is the picture of a mother hen gathering her chicks. Now, I'm a city kid born in Yakima, a sizable town in eastern Washington, but some of you are farmers. Anybody here seen a hen gathering her chicks? If so, let me see your hand. Let me see. Oh, well, sure. See there? Yeah. The one image I had was when I visited my cousin Larry in Sunnyside, and they lived on the edge of town, so they raised a few chickens. And one morning, I saw the mother hen raised her wings, and she clucked a few times. And all the cute little chicks scurried up next to her, you know, and she lowered her arms and drew them close to herself and thus close to each other. That's what God does. God draws us close to the God self and thus to each other. Did Jesus ever talk about chickens? Yeah, both a rooster and a hen. In John 13, Jesus is speaking to the Apostle Peter. And he says, truly, I say to you, you will betray me three times before the cock. That's the rooster. And just a few days before, Jesus had come to Jerusalem for the last time on the eve of his death. And he says movingly about Jerusalem, 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 the city that kills the prophets and stones those who are sent to it. How often I have desired to gather your children together as a hen gathers her brood under her wings. And you were not willing. I think we can see Christ looking at America, so badly divided, so sadly divided, and saying, America, America, how often would I have gathered you as a hen gathers her brood. One person who has had a real impact on my thinking is a Presbyterian theologian and psychologist named Reuel Howe. I spent several days with him in a seminar in Berkeley, and I was attracted to him because of a book that he had written. And the book was titled Man's Need and God's Action. And as a psychologist, he identifies a deep need that you and I have within our souls, in the depths of our souls. And the need he identifies is that we have a longing to be at one with all. We may not recognize that longing in ourselves because our souls are crusted over with our dislikes and our antipathies and our hatreds and our daily concerns. But that deep longing is in every soul here, to be at one with all. It is there because God put it there, because it is God's own longing that we be at one with all. With all, Pastor? Our enemies? Yes. Pastor, I know that Jesus says, love your enemies, Matthew 5, but to say that we have a longing to be at one with our enemies, that raises enemy love to a whole new level. It surely does, and it is a level we cannot attain to. We can't do it on our own. Man's need, be at one. God's action, Christ, who makes it possible. Not in my lifetime, Pastor. Right. And not in mine. But he says, in the fullness of time, he says, on earth and in heaven, it will take from now into eternity for us to be at one with each other. But it is going to happen because it is the work of Christ. Reuel Howe's full statement is, we long to be at one with someone through whom we can be at one with all. Isn't that a lovely statement? We long to be at one with someone, Christ, through whom we can be at one with all. And I suggest that begins now. And I'm going to use an example from history. My question is this. Over the last 100 years, when was the whole world most divided? When over the last century was the whole world split? Those of you who are 75 and older will accept my example because you were alive when it happened. And I am talking about the Second World War. I was 8 years old when the war began in Europe, and I became aware as a child that the world was divided between the Axis and the Allies. Axis were the Germans and Hitler, Italia, Italy, and Mussolini, Japan, Tojo. And the Allies were America, Canada, Britain, France, Russia, China, Yugoslavia, the Netherlands, New Zealand, Poland, Belgium, and Greece, and others as they were attacked. As a child, I learned to hate the Allies. Children can hate. There was a musical that came out of the Second World War, South Pacific. Valley High is calling. I'm going to wash that man right out of my hair. And a gutsy little tune titled, You Have to Be Carefully Taught. And it goes like this. You've got to be taught to hate and to fear. You've got to be taught from year to year. It's got to be drummed in your dear little ear. You've got to be taught before it's too late, before you are 6 or 7 or 8, to hate all the people your relatives hate. You've got to be carefully taught. Now, I did not learn to hate from my parents or from my teachers. Though there was hatred at school, I have a clear memory of my mother sternly speaking to my younger sister, telling her never to share her full name at school, because my sister's full name was Jacqueline Alice Perry. And what do those initials spell? Gap. And my mother had been a teacher, and she knew how cruel kids could be, and she didn't want my sister to be hurt by the ridicule of her friends. I did learn to hate by what I saw and what I heard. And what I saw and heard in those days came through the movies, 1930s and 40s. Hard to exaggerate how significant the movies were in impacting our nation during those decades. No television, no computers, no iPhones, but we had the movies. So in Yakima, it was a treat on a Saturday afternoon to board the streetcar that came right behind our home with a buddy and with a cousin maybe, and go into downtown Yakima to a full afternoon of the movies, because it would take all afternoon, because you had two full features and then some Disney cartoons in between, and what was called a short, which was a short movie like The Perils of Pauline. And most of those movies were cowboy movies. Gene Autry and Tom Mix from Arizona, and Roy Rogers and The Lone Ranger. And some of those movies were scary. Frankenstein, The Wolfman, The Mummy, King Kong. And when King Kong climbed the Empire State Building and thrust his arm through the window to seize the heroine, I hid behind the seat in front of me while my older cousin laughed at me. In 1941, my father got a job across the state at Skagit Steel and Iron Works. And they were into the war industry. They made logging engines, but they also made winches for battleships and for cargo ships. And Skagit Steel was located in a little town called Cedro Woolley, 3,500 people. Don't laugh at the name of my hometown, Cedro Woolley. So we moved across the state, and since it was a small town, I could walk from my house to the Dream Theater. And now the movies really became scary. And their titles were The Battle of the Bulge, and Midway, and Bataan, and Iwo Jima. And Iwo Jima, I think, was the one which showed jungle warfare with the GIs in protecting themselves in their foxholes, finally falling to sleep in the darkness, only to have the Japanese soldiers creep stealthily to them and slit their throats. I had nightmares, that one. And we had the newsreels. The newsreels gave us our visualizations and the sound of the war, the shock of Pearl Harbor, the demolition bombing of London, the carnage of Normandy, the horror of Auschwitz. So I hated because of what I saw and heard. War ended, and movies changed. After the war, in the newsreels, we saw the destruction we had caused terribly in Europe. And in one of our nation's finer hours, we caught the dream of George Marshall, and we inaugurated the Marshall Plan, $130 billion that we gave then to Europe to restart their economy, rebuild their town, and they were grateful. And in Japan, now in the movies, we saw ground-level shots of the utter desolation of Hiroshima and Nagasaki. And we saw the poverty and the chaos of Japan. And I saw how Britain and America occupied Japan benevolently under the wartime leadership of General MacArthur. And Japan became then a parliamentary democracy. And our missionaries were admitted. And Billy Graham distributed pamphlets of the Gospel of John as broadly as he could. And something remarkable happened. Unforgettable. The Axis became our allies. Our enemies became our friends and are so today. I can see the mystery of the will of God in that, can't you? I can see Christ at work in that, can't you? Four years after the war was over, Billy Graham came to Seattle for one of his great crusades, and our family went. Graham died this past year, and I marked that because he influenced my life. When I became a pastor, I volunteered to be a counselor at two of his crusades, one in San Francisco and another in Los Angeles. And I can still, as a 17-year-old, recall the sermon he preached that night. It was Matthew 23:37, where Jesus says, "When I am lifted up from the earth, I will draw all people to myself." When I am lifted up the cross from the earth, I will draw all people to myself. And gathers. And he used the metaphor of a Grand Central Station, trains. In those days, trains were the form of transcontinental transportation. There were a lot more trains, and they were cheaper than planes. And I knew that I was, within a year, going to take the longest train trip of my life from Seattle all the way across the country to Augustana College in Rock Island, Illinois. So that train metaphor rang true for me. And he said this, imagine Grand Central Station, and trains from all around our nation have their origins far away. And as they travel across the land, they converge at their destination, which is Grand Central Station. That's how it is with Christ. Christ is our destination. Christ is our destiny. And as we are drawn to him, we are drawn to each other. Conclusion. I love to go out under the dark valley sky at night and see points of light. A light there, a little light there, a little light there. And they are moving. They are planes gathering together in a flight pattern, which will land them at Sky Harbor. I love that as a destination name. It kind of sounds like heaven, Sky Harbor. And I've flown into that harbor how many times? And it's like that. Sky Harbor is an international airport, which means that people from all over the world are converging at their destination. Guy, we long to be at one with someone to whom we can be at one with all.